This is Jay Paul with NashvilleRock.net. Under the covers, I'm with the Clips, here with Travis Burrows and Sean Harrison. Thanks for joining me today, guys.
Oh, appreciate it.
We're talking about Eclipse today, great Pink Floyd tribute band, and I've been waiting for you guys to play for a long time, and the times that you guys have played up in out of town. So, big show coming up at the Mercy Lounge this Saturday. Saturday the 3rd. Tell me about the beginnings of Eclipse, because I know there's been some changes here recently, and it's been a long, hard haul getting this thing up and running.
Well, I came into the project in April of 06, but the guys started the project, I believe, in February, if I'm not mistaken. So it started off with Adam, our lead guitarist, and Brian, our drummer. They both worked for Dave Ramsey. Here in Nashville, but anyway, so for several months they've gone through audition processes, and I basically just saw where they were looking for different positions, but not a keyboard player, ironically. So I shot an email and said, hey, I'm a keyboard player, love Floyd, if you have that opening ever come up, please keep me in mind, I'd be interested in talking further. And that's how I came on board through the audition process. But from there, it's just been an evolving, an ongoing process from day one, so we're trying to get the right lineup with the right people.
Nice, and there is a true love for Pink Floyd in this lineup, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Gotta have it.
Right on.
Gotta have it. Otherwise, it's just not gonna happen.
Well, when you joined, was it up and running, or did you guys play songs, or did you start with the rehearsal process?
With the rehearsal process, woodshed. Basically, from what I understand, Brian just burned CDs of the tunes they wanted to begin looking at. Originally, basically the four primary albums, Wish You Were Here, The Wall, Dark Side, and Animals. And just took one album at a time and said, okay guys, go home, woodshed, learn your parts, come back in a week, and we start the process. And it just started rolling from there.
So you would do homework assignments and systematically chip away at what you considered to be your set list.
Rehearse on your own, learn your parts, come in and put it together, and polish it from there. So it's kind of been the work ethic.
Nice.
All along.
So you record your rehearsals, you listen back to them?
Sometimes. We have done that on occasion. So I don't think we do every rehearsal, but just to go back and listen and kind of get our bearings as to where we're at, how far we've come, and where we need to go.
Right on. Now, Sean, tell us about how you joined.
Man, this was the scariest audition ever. I saw an ad on the internet and shot Brian an email. He was looking for, originally they were posting for a guitar player who could sing, and that was the position I called him and was going to audition for. I told him I was primarily a bass player, and he said, well, you need to come on in for that sort of thing. And I've always been a big Floyd fan. He gave me the standard three or four songs to audition with, Time, Young Lust, Have a Cigar, some other stuff. And I worked on the stuff, and I thought, well, I've got this down pretty good, I'm going to do fine. And I got here, and when I opened that door up, the amount of stuff that they had, and the people in here, it was obvious they were extremely serious. And it was a very harrowing audition. They said, okay, here we go, and they were right into it immediately, and it was like playing along with a Floyd album. It was incredible how well they had their stuff down.
And they didn't kick you out because you played a six string?
They didn't kick me out because bass players are hard to find.
Yeah, that would be the first consideration.
Right on.
It was harrowing, and after that was several weeks of intense woodshedding trying to catch up to a standard, a level of what is considered good enough that they had set for themselves that I frankly wasn't used to. And now it still requires constant attention.
Nice. Now, technically speaking, how microscopic do you guys get on reproducing some of these things? For example, if Roger Waters used a pick on a tune, do you make sure you use a pick on that, or?
I'll make sure that I can reproduce that sound. I don't really use a pick, but I'll use my fingernail.
Right.
Those bits.
Right.
I specifically bought the four-string Corvette Warwick fretless just to play Hey You properly. And then I found out we were going to do another song called Keep Talking, so I needed a 5-string fretless, so I had to get that. It's been a very expensive band to be in. So far, I'm still in the red, so it needs to make some money. But as far as the tones go, we really, really spend a lot of time on that.
And you guys custom make your own samples and multimedia clips and to accurately reproduce what's on the album?
Sean, I think that's going to be more your question.
We custom do a lot of them. Some of them we'll extract from where we can find them. There's a lot of internet resources along those lines. There's a lot of MIDI stuff you can do. If you look around maniacally, the goal is not so much to avoid stealing stuff off the album. The goal is just to get it as close as you can so that we can still play the notes. We still play the notes. Anything that's not musical, we don't really care where we get it from. We want to project that so that you have the full Pink Floyd experience. But we got to segregate that from the notes that we play. The music stuff's got to come from us. Anything else, the samples stuff can come from anywhere, we don't care. You know, like the helicopter, it doesn't really matter.
The arpeggiator, the helicopter, all that kind of stuff has become almost a hook unto itself.
Yeah, and the helicopter for us would be a sample, but the arpeggiator, poor old Adam would probably have to actually play the notes.
You're right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so I'm excited.
You guys are multimedia as well, I mean, and almost to the extent of really being hard to present your full deal in a club environment.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, well, if it's a regular club, we don't have room. We have to scale things down.
Tell our listeners about some of those things that you present.
Well, you have to have the obligatory round thing, the big round truss that we shoot video into that, and off to the sides of it as well, depending on the song, what's happening. The movers and the lasers and all that stuff. And you can't just go in any old club and set up a couple of high-powered concert lasers because someone's going to walk in front of it and
be blinded for life.
And be blinded for life, or whatever might happen to them. I don't want to take the chance. But we're very skilled at this point at going to the club, looking around, saying, yeah, we can fit that, bring it in. And you have to check, you know, there's little things like power requirements, load-bearing members, things like that. You really got to have all those things you check. As the show gets bigger and bigger, there's a longer and longer list. So that's why you put together a very well thought out technical rider that will touch on all those things. And it's important to get in and walk the room and make sure that all the points are hit. You know that you're going to be able to technologically pull off what you're going to try to pull off. We're a little spoiled with our guitar player, Adam, anyway. He's what is he, 26?
I think so.
And he is absolutely channeling David Gilmour's spirit.
Nice.
It's incredible.
Yeah, tone-wise, technically speaking, yeah.
You see the
he's got the chops covered in every aspect. So
nice,
you couldn't be happier as far as
and of course he plays keyboards too.
Nice. And there's the great David Gilmour Eric Clapton debate as to which side of the fence you fall on. And
yeah, I don't battle wits with unarmed people. So.
I straddle the fence between the two, but occasionally I do fall on to a person.
I think they're on each in a class of their own.
Yeah.
It's hard to, like,
that's politically kind.
Well, you know, to rank one against the other because they each hold their own place in musical history. I mean, I think that's not even up for debate. So
I think growing up, I spent too many times in cover bands playing Cocaine and Layla and White Room. I just can't stand that dude anymore. I'm sorry.
Bless his heart.
Bless his heart. You know, he's a talent. Okay, fine. I don't want to listen to it, though. I can't stand it anymore. I've just played it too many times.
Yeah.
I bet I could go in the studio and cut cocaine by myself. Everything.
He's kind of spoiled because he's somehow gotten permission to go through these phases and play his country thing, and play his reggae, and do his traditional blues thing, and do his 80s, and he's somehow allowed to do that, and good for him.
Yeah.
But Gilmour always sounds like Gilmour.
Yeah.
God bless him.
Yeah.
And Gilmour's got that gift of just the one note and moving people with just one note.
Yep.
That is the beauty in his style.
And Adam's got that. God bless him.
Adam's got that. For sure. And that's such a signature part of having a true Floyd sound.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, hands down. So yeah.
When things were coming together, Brian and I would joke between, you know, quietly while we're playing, that no matter what happens, if we just make it to the guitar solo, everything's going to be fine at that point. It's going to be okay.
It's our safety net.
Because there's so many little things going on, and to remember, if you get off track in a lot of these songs, it's very difficult to get back on. And you, but subconsciously, you're listening for all these little signature things. And if one of them comes to the guitar, you can bet your balls he's going to do it.
Nice.
And you're going to hear it, and you go, oh, yeah, pound, you're back in the groove right there. So he bails it out. If there's ever a problem, he bails you right out.
Nice. You guys have any theories as to why the music of Pink Floyd has become so timeless and seems to permeate generations?
Oh, that's a good question.
I can only speak for myself. It moves me.
Yeah.
Every time I hear it, and I've listened to it for many, many years,
yeah,
and it seems to never lose its edge.
Because it's not going anywhere. It's not. It's only growing bigger. And
how many different styles of music out there can you play that they make you feel as good every time you play it, no matter how many times you play it? That is kind of the way I would describe Floyd. I mean,
I think there's a depth there too that I noticed that when I listen to these songs, they mean something different to me now at 40 than they did when I was 20 and when I was 30. And that in combination with, if you pay attention, you'll always hear something new. You'll always hear something you didn't notice, some subtle little thing, and you go, oh, that was nice, that was good thinking. You know, it's like it's never boring. You know, there's always something of interest.
Absolutely. And musically, vocally, it's always there.
And plus, radios went to hell in the last 10 years. I haven't heard anything on radio I want to hear in such a long time, I can't remember.
This is true. It's one thing that's helped me to keep my, keep myself rooted as far as what I call true music, and the music that moves you every time you hear it. So,
right.
Yeah, you don't hear like London Philharmonic covering any of Poison stuff. They're not going to come out with an album of that.
Well, yet.
Yeah. Well, I'll give them another 10 years. You never know. But you know, you'll hear Floyd all over the place. I mean, who's been covered as many times with Muzak and elevator music and in games on TV, soundtracks. It's all over the place. It's an integral part of the culture worldwide.
We'll have to see what hip hop does to it here next. it's coming, oh, buddy. It's coming.
Well, I'm glad I'm 40. I'll be going.
There'll be a crowd out there for it. I have no doubt about that, but I won't be in that crowd. At least I wouldn't put any money on it. But that's just because Floyd is successful for what it is because of the way it is. And when you start to change that, even if it's in an honorable fashion, such as another style trying to, honor it in their own way, same way Aerosmith and Run DMC came together with Walk This Way. You got two different styles of music, hip-hop and classic rock, boom, and then this explosion of a whole new sound. But you got both of those elements intertwined. So, but with Floyd, I can't imagine that ever being able to be changed and have the same impact as it does in his true form.
So, and it's the depth will carry him, though. It won't matter. The bands that have the depth are the ones that are around for 20, 30, 40, 50 years.
Right.
How long has Yes been playing?
Yeah.
Come on.
Exactly.
Yes, Rush,
sure.
Floyd, those guys that have the depth. They're
right.
Not writing Boy Meets Girl or Boy Shoots Cop, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
If they're really provoking some thought, they're going to be around.
It's the all-around life experience, and that's what Floyd is about.
Nice. So tell me about your work ethic. You guys do a little rehearsal once a week or whenever there's a show, or how does that
twice
work?
Twice a week.
At least twice a week.
Month.
Twice a week, and then a lot of wood shedding, and then depending on the show, like we'll rip stuff out and move things around like we have, we'll really pound it out. We'll have at least three rehearsals just this week before the show.
Nice.
Just to make sure the set list is tight and the segues are good.
Right, because there's so much of the segue portion of what we do where there's no break between maybe three songs in a row.
Yeah, and we maniacally do not count stuff off.
Right.
It's a feel thing. You might hear Brian just bam into something, just one little tap, but we don't do the count.
There's no physical, or I should say verbal count.
Yeah, you won't hear that
drum. So.
That's interesting.
Well, you don't hear Floyd counting them off.
Nice.
But yeah, for patch change purposes, for us keyboard players, and even for, you know, obviously guitarists and bassists as well.
Yeah.
Brian getting his special effects queued up and ready to be triggered whenever that's necessary. You know, there's a lot of logistics involved in, you know, it's the technical side of the performance.
It's a house of cards, too, because there's so many places where I'm not counting the measure, I know that I cue, because it'll be freeform stuff. Well, I cue when he hits a D-flat. When he hits a D-flat three times, I know I go into the blah. And when I go into the blah, Adam knows it's time for him. You know, everybody's depending on each other for so many little things. If one person misses it, it's going to be a bad day for everybody. Get the juggling act going on. It can be very...
That's how great music works sometimes. It's very interdependent.
Very much so.
You know? Yeah. So, very cool. Well, anything you guys want to add in wrapping up?
I think it only gets bigger and better from here. That's kind of what the way we all feel about it at this point. It's taken it this long, like I said earlier on in the interview, to basically get us the lineup that we feel we finally need to pull it off on a level that we feel is a bare minimum that will be successful in as far as a tribute Floyd band is concerned. So we're up to 7 members now. It includes 2 female backgrounds. And we may have a 3rd before it's over with. But, you know, to have that full lineup to be able to cover every possible part that needs to be covered that's considered critical and crucial to the sound, that's really the key. Because if you're missing that one person or instrument, it can make all the difference.
Yeah, there are songs we don't do just because we're missing one little thing that we can't do.
Right.
So we just, you know, like dogs.
Right.
There's a one little guitar line in there that we don't have enough hands, so we just don't do the song until we get that person.
Right.
So, but as far as an initial plan, the whole idea is to try and start getting on a regular circuit with the colleges within a 3-4 hour radius of Nashville. So.
Yeah, and as long as we're still rolling, if there's any booking agents listening to this thing who think that they can book something like this that's bigger than your average bar band, call us up.
Yeah, I would imagine Eclipse would go over really well with the college crowd.
Yeah,
we've played some shows for some college crowds down in Murfreesboro and TSU, and just the fact that there's an opportunity to drink beer and listen to Pink Floyd music, it's huge.
Right. Excellent. Well, everybody, come on out to the show, Mercy Lounge, February the 3rd, this Saturday. Thanks a lot, gentlemen.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Right on.